to Witchy Weed Podcast. Hey guys, with you as always, it's me, Stardust, and I'm joined by the Spooky Crew. Joined by Twisted Vic.
Hey guys, it's me.
Hey Lou the Fool.
Howdy, y'all.
And your mom. Cockahead is behind the scenes this week again, and Explicit is explicitly not here.
Probably somewhere off eating some ice food.
He's in Puerto Rico.
Is he really?
No. Oh. Did you just pull a cockahead?
Voldemort's in this?
Oh, God, guys. So, the podcast is growing. I keep saying it every episode, but it astounds me. Right now, we keep having more and more listeners in Africa, y'all.
Oh, yeah.
That is crazy. Our Instagram is basically at 1,500 followers at this point.
Woo-hoo!
Nice. We got to give our shout outs to some of our faithful Instagram followers. We got at the Morbid Girls. We got at Killing 15 Minutes. Hope you're killing those 15 minutes listening to our podcast.
Yeah.
At unapologetic.movie.collector. Hey, I'm with you on that. Mm-hmm. At Angie's Creepy Little Soul. Hey, Lou, she's got a creepy little soul. She could probably share with you.
She at least has that on me. I have no soul.
We've got at The Great Girth Podcast. I'm wondering what has a great girth? We need to confer on this because we need to know what has a great girth on that. But hey, Twist is like, no, I'm good. And also we've got at The Paranormal Lovers. So yeah, those are our kind of people. Mm-hmm. So woot woot to all our followers. So last week's episode, our Spooky Crew ghost stories. That was kind of creepy. It's crazy how we've all had some kind of paranormal experience.
Even recently.
Well, we definitely got to do a follow-up episode of Creepy Ghost Stories and share the experience that Twisted, your mom, and I had recently right here in our very own studio. So, yeah, we definitely will have a follow-up episode on that. Maybe a live, maybe, you know, make it a little bit more interesting for our listeners. Give them a little bit of a sneaky insight into our creepy little lives. So, but other than that, what is the strain of the week this week, Halo?
I believe it's the Boston Tea Party.
The Boston Tea Party! Alrighty then. Because
some tea.
It is time.
Some tea and crumpets.
Some tea and crumpets.
Tis time to get litty like a titty. Yay! It is my favorite time.
It's tea time.
It's tea time, darling.
Don't forget the crumpets.
And what's that African food you want to eat?
Fufu.
Fufu.
I want to try that so bad. Still haven't gotten to it.
We have to try that. We should do that tomorrow. Oh, your mommy gonna be here. You're gonna be working. Dang it!
I'm gonna be cat sitting.
She gonna be cat. That means I can't even go to the stoner's market. Dang it! That's tomorrow.
No. Yeah. Wait, I'll come.
I was so sad when I found out I have
to. No, I'll come. What time is it?
It is from 1 to 5.
1 to 5?
They can sponsor us if they like.
I'll get it with you.
Yay! But all right. So this week's discussion. We have a return of our Fact or Fiction series, which we will obviously be having this as a regular type of series in our podcast. But this week's we're examining the case of Denise Huskins versus the movie Gone Girl, which is the movie that it was compared to when the case was going on.
Which we're not saying that she did that.
No. Mm-hmm. It's just the media often compared the case to the movie. Mm-hmm.
As media does,
because media likes to over-sensationalize shit. You know, paparazzis. Dang you. But unless you're following the spooky crew. But hey, that's neither here nor there. So as far as, let's look at first the Denise Huskins case. I'm going to be honest, I hadn't heard of this case until we watched the documentary, American Nightmare, on Netflix. Netflix, you could sponsor us. But it was actually a very interesting documentary. And for those of you that haven't watched it, I guess I could fill you in. But before I do, since I'm going to get Liddy, everybody else can fill in on what you guys thought about the documentary. So don't talk at once.
That's all right. I'm just not a documentary person.
My jaw was on the floor.
Was I the only one that kept like suspecting everyone?
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, you aren't the only one. I also did that.
I thought it was everybody at one point.
It's them. I guess not. Like, oh my God.
Because really with this,
The ex.
Yeah.
I kept blaming the bitchy ex.
Well, first I thought it was the boyfriend.
Yep. Yeah.
And then I thought it was the ex. And then,
she was faking it.
Right. And then I even was, like, in agreement with the media, and it's like, this is all her, you know? And then, come to find out, you know?
What a twist. Which we shall get there.
But not gonna lie, it was funny as hell that when we started the fucking documentary, I forgot who it was that went, it's the boyfriend.
I think it was me.
Yeah, and the first person to interview was the boyfriend, goes, never mind.
That was both of us.
Because normally, let's be honest, in most of these like true crime documentaries about missing females, it is the spouse boyfriend. Or the boyfriend.
I mean, hello, Gabby Petito.
Shanann Watts. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of them, actually, that if you think about it, it was the significant other.
What are you singing? This is not the time for Vine references.
Your youth is showing.
Yeah. I miss Vine, though. Rip Vine. Vine, if you're still around, come somehow, some way, you can sponsor us.
Yeah. Come back and then sponsor us.
TikTok's getting banned, so we need something new now.
TikTok's getting banned?
Yeah.
Again?
Oh, God.
Yeah. They can't take TikTok away. That's fucking freedom of speech.
Seriously. I enjoy it so much. I like looking at all the TikTok videos. But anyways, going back to Denise Huskins, poor girl. So let's fill in our listeners, those that did not see the documentary have no idea what the fuck happened in this case. So on March 23rd, 2015, in the early morning hours, an intruder breaks into the San Francisco home shared by Denise Huskins and her boyfriend while they slept, and woke them up by shining a bright, blinding light in their faces, tied them up, blindfolded them, made them drink a sedative while carrying a fake gun. All of a sudden, you're hearing this and you're saying, this sounds very sus. Mm-hmm. I know when I saw the documentary and I heard about it, I was like, why does it sound staged, you know?
Yeah.
But, so, this person also played them a pre-recorded message saying that the home invasion was being carried out by a professional group that was collecting financial debts and threatening them with violence if they didn't follow their instructions. Denise was then kidnapped and taken away by car, and her boyfriend Quinn received 2 ransom demands for $17,000. I mean, you're collecting ransom and that's all you're freaking asking for? 17 grand?
That's a very specific amount.
Right? It sounds like they have a specific debt that they need to pay.
Yeah.
You know, gambling much, maybe? But, and the funny thing is, the debt was never actually paid.
Uh-huh. Losers.
But yet, Denise was not harmed, as we will see, but getting ahead of myself, I guess. According to a lawsuit that Denise and Quinn later filed against the city of Vallejo and members of its police force, when Quinn woke up from being drugged and having taken the sedative hours later, he actually agonized for the next several hours about what to do. He was terrified about what the kidnappers would do to his girlfriend if he alerted the police. He was also warned that there was a camera monitoring his movements in the house, and if he contacted the police, the kidnappers would kill Denise. So, I mean, imagine yourself in that position. People say, why didn't you call the cops right away? In his defense, he's thinking there's cameras all around my place. If I call the cops, they're killing Denise. But then he wants to do something to help Denise, so he's like, what the fuck do I do?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't blame the poor guy and then be like, why didn't you call? Shit.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't have known what to do either.
Honestly, it's really easy to be like, oh, why didn't you do this? And why didn't you? But until you're in that position, you don't know what the fuck
you don't know what your mental capabilities yeah. are capable of at that moment, you know?
Yeah.
If you're going to actually be able to think rationally and clearly, or if you're just going to go fed off of fucking, like, fear and panic. You don't right. know. So, I mean, yeah, I don't condone people just like, why didn't they do this in the middle of a freaking crime or tragedy or some shit going on? You just don't know. Mm-hmm. So, but at around 2 p.m. that day, he finally made the decision he was going to call. He was like, I have to do something. I can't just sit around. The lawsuit alleges that the police failed to carry out a routine investigation and actually missed key evidence of the kidnapping. Rather than even entertain that Quinn was telling the truth and that Denise and the public were at an extreme danger from a violent predator, the police immediately and recklessly assumed, based on nothing but fanciful speculation, that Denise was already dead and that Quinn had killed her. This is what the lawsuit said, verbatim, actually. Over the next 48 hours, police went from trying to pin Denise's disappearance on her boyfriend Quinn, to framing Denise herself as the perpetrator of a scheme similar to the faked abduction in the center of the movie Gone Girl. So this is where the whole Gone Girl thing comes. So they basically started saying, okay, well, if he didn't kill her or do anything to her, then she must have faked it all, and she's trying to get money somehow. You know? So it's like these cops really didn't even really try to investigate and find out what was going on. They made assumptions and ran with it, you know?
Which is crazy.
And it happens a lot more than you'd think. At least, I mean, those of us that watch a lot of true crime documentaries can definitely say that in a lot of cases, cops will drop the ball and miss key evidence because they're just going based on what they think happened.
Look at Magnata.
Look at Magnata. Exactly. That's a perfect example of how, if it wasn't for the crime detectives, not even the crime detectives, the internet people, regular fucking Joes and shit, working casinos and what have you, data analysts and what have you, they were the ones that were able to basically figure out where he was and solve the crime. Well, in this one, the cops were just running with their theory and failed to do typical protocol like they should have. Because they assumed. So they proceeded to interrogate Quinn aggressively for 18 straight hours while Denise was still in the hands of a violent kidnapper and being subjected to even more grievous harm. Quinn was also subjected to a lie detector test and told that he failed, according to the lawsuit. So they were lying to him, basically telling him, you failed, so tell us the truth.
Oh my God.
Yeah. 2 days later, on March 25th, Denise was freed near her parents' home in Huntington Beach, California. The lawsuit alleged that Matthew Mustard, you guys remember that?
Oh, I know we
roasted the shit out of him with that.
We were like, where's the tape of ketchup?
I mean, Sergeant Barbecue.
Or no, it reminds me of the scene from the SpongeBob movie where it's like, well, what will it be, fellas? Mustard or ketchup? And they start fucking laughing.
It reminded me of Good Burger with the old lady at the end. Oh, poo, I wanted mustard. But it's just, yeah, Matthew Mustard. Like, I would have changed my name, seriously. Yeah. Eminem. I never even thought of that, but just the fact that he was Mustard. And they kept like, oh, Detective or whatever, Sergeant Mustard, whatever the hell ranking he was. But they kept referring to him as that Mustard, and it's like, fuck, come on, man. You expect us to not laugh and take this seriously when you're referring to him as Mustard?
When the last names were created, like, from so long ago, why the fuck did they pick Mustard?
Was it already a condiment, or did the condiment get named after the person, kind of like sandwich?
I don't know.
True, how did Mustard, because there's Mustard seed, but how did actual Mustard, like, the condiment come to be? Like, who invented mustard?
You know, if we start getting into these kind of high thoughts of all kinds of who came up with this? Who thought of doing this for the first time? Who milked a cow for the first time?
Went to a cow, jerked it off. Myself came out and drank it.
And said, ooh, it's milk! Like, seriously, if you really start thinking about the first of
that
everything...
That cow was doing some weird things, that cow.
What did he also do that he didn't discover anything out of, but just got his own, you know, guilty pleasures or whatever out of it?
Could have been trying to look for a bull and be like, oh, well, a cow would do.
Can you imagine if he actually did that to the bull? And, Anyways, let's get back on topic here.
Whoever invented homework, I want to go back in time and beat them the fuck up.
Whoever invented homework?
Yeah.
Whoever invented work.
Oh, I thought you said Hallmark, like...
No. Hallmark movies?
Oh, whoever went to Hallmark movies, too. No offense to any of my listeners that actually watch those shits, but come on.
Oh, all right.
Is it just me, or maybe 85% of these movies, I'm going to tell you, rich business owner, single female that works for him, he's got like a dying parent or something that he's going to collect the inheritance, but there's a clause in the will that says he needs to be married or to leave it to his heirs or whatever. And so he now has to come up with a fake wife and a fake family to be able to get either the board's approval or whatever. And so he gets this worker for him that coincidentally happens to be very good looking and he never noticed before. But now in this process that they are pretending to be married and whatnot, they fall in love, and he also happens to build a bond with her child or children. Am I pretty much spot on?
The one that I saw, nowhere near like that.
You saw a different one.
It was like a Christmas one.
I just
Christmas is different.
I just want to go back to the conversation of mustard, because I did look it up. Like, I even put in the condiment, because I understand that, obviously, mustard was a thing before
mustard.
Well, the seeds itself were around, but who even named it at that point? But, yeah.
And we're just going to name it mustard. Like, fuck it. No thought process.
Fun fact, though. Where did mustard condiment originate? It is believed to have originated in ancient Egypt. The Greeks used mustard as a medicine and a spice. The Romans emulated the Greeks using it as both food and medicine as well, ascribing it as a cure for anything from hysteria to snake bite to the bubonic plague.
Holy fuck.
Damn, they had like a lot of faith in
But you know what this shows me? That the old man in my big fat Greek wedding was right. Everything starts with the Greeks.
For real.
True.
Am I right or am I right?
I want to know if he's right about the Windex thing. Like, if you've got like a...
Try it.
I mean, I might die, but...
Next time you have some kind of pimple affliction, anything, spray some Windex on it and see if it works. Let us know.
Hey, your mom, you got a lot of pimples.
Hey.
She's like, you're fuck me. You. But yeah. Going back to this, so, like I said, on March 25th, Denise was freed near her parents' home in Huntington Beach, California. And the lawsuit alleged that Matthew Mustard, the detective with the Vallejo Police Department, instantaneously and tactically discounted his theory that Quinn murdered Denise and entertained a salacious and absurd Gone Girl theory. In reference to the book and movie, because there's also a book. It was the movie adaptation was based off of the book, which now I want to read. But in which a woman elaborately stages her own abduction. Hours later, Vallejo police said publicly that they believed the couple had made the story up. So they thought, oh, they're working together, making this shit up, trying to get some money out of everybody.
Every time you say their name, I keep thinking you're trying to say Vallejo.
Vallejo.
Well, I was gonna ask him, like, doesn't that mean old man in Spanish?
I guess the good thing he brought it up. No, it's Vallejo.
Oh, Valle. Oh,
yeah, Vallejo.
Oh,
Vallejo.
This whole time I've been hearing Viejo,
which Viejo. You know, to people that do not know how to pronunciate it correctly, they would say Vallejo.
Vallejo.
It's not Vallejo. It's Vallejo.
Yeah.
Vallejo police.
Does that mean anything?
I believe it's like some sort of valley.
Oh.
You know? So, yeah. Basically saying Valley Police Department. But, yeah. Just in a fancy Spanish way. But so the Vallejo Police Department, like I said, they had Detective Mustard over there, you know, along with Sergeant Ketchup, came up with the fact that these two were working together, faked it all together. They based it off of the Gone Girl movie, and they basically wasted away valuable resources from the community and took focus away from actual victims of the crime, while actually even putting fear among the community members. The Lieutenant Kenny Park said in a news conference that night that he said that the couple owes the community an apology and described the case as a wild goose chase. So he was already basically clearing himself and washing his hands of it, saying, I blame them. They made it up. Y'all can fucking blame them and hate them for it. It's basically what he was telling the people in the media. Park also said that the couple would face criminal charges. The Washington Post reported at the same time, and then came another bizarre twist in this whole case. Which is why when we were watching it, if you remember, we kept saying, what now? Because every time we would think that we knew what was going on, something else would fucking flip.
Yeah.
So it was around this time that the San Francisco Chronicle said it received a series of emails from someone claiming to be Denise's kidnapper, saying that her ordeal had been real, they wanted to clear her name, and they were demanding that the police apologize to Denise and Quinn.
It's crazy, like, I mean, I guess I might be getting a little bit ahead of myself, but
professionals have standards.
Yeah. Yeah. Professionals want credit, damn it.
No, but it's like, he cared about her, too. Which is weird. It's like,
you don't see kidnappers caring about the victim that they already freed.
Yeah.
So it kind of makes it look fake at the same time.
Yeah. And I'm not going to lie, like, I guess if you're watching the documentary, it was at the point where she was released that, and, you know, the media was saying everything, the detective. I honestly, yeah, I believe them because it's like, she was so chill.
Yeah.
It looked, at least from the outside.
I will say that. I will say that. Remember the video of when she's walking up to, like, her parents' house? I'm sorry. That was where I thought she was guilty.
The voice recording.
Her voice recording.
Oh, yeah.
She sounded,
yeah.
I'm okay. Calm. Blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm like, it'd be me and you would hear it in my voice. It'd be me and in that video, you'd see me like freaking the fuck out, running to my parents' house to be able to get in and like save myself.
Well, and I mean, being devil's advocate though, I guess she couldn't sound like too like much in distress because
she didn't want to scare her parents, maybe.
Well, it's more so like, of course, the kidnappers, they're recording this with her. They
probably
would make
her
yeah, re-record it or whatever,
yeah,
to make her sound as calm as possible.
Yeah, and she's
so,
probably in herself saying, I gotta do what I gotta do to survive.
Yeah.
So again, we cannot...
Isn't she drugged?
Oh, that's right. She did say she was drugged, too, while all of this was going on.
Oh, that's right.
They kept her calm by drugging her. Which explains completely why she was so calm.
But
she was
like when we
them.
First heard it, they didn't tell us that yet.
So we're listening, and we're like, and you're gonna be that calm when you're kidnapped, really?
Yeah. Honestly, after everything was said and done, like they revealed everything, I kind of felt like shitty. I was like, damn,
I was
really
blaming her. Like,
yeah,
like
yeah, I did. I felt really bad because I blamed her. I blamed her boyfriend. I blamed the ex.
We blamed everybody.
I blamed everybody but the person.
Yeah.
I blame Detective Mustard.
I blame Detective Mustard and Sergeant Ketchup.
Sorry, y'all.
And Captain Barbecue.
And Colonel Mayo.
And
Sergeant Ranch.
And Private Relish.
I was thinking Ranger Relish. Oh, man. Okay. But, all right. So, according to the newspaper...
Ranger Worship.
According to the newspaper, the first email was sent before Huskins' release, before Denise's release, and contained a proof of life message from a woman who identified herself as Denise. Further emails included a large number of details of the alleged kidnapping. A lawyer for Denise told the San Francisco Chronicle that the account contains details that only Denise, Aaron Quinn, which I've kept referring to him as Quinn, his first name was Aaron, by the way. So Denise, Aaron, and the kidnappers would know. It was later confirmed, including in an FBI affidavit, that the emails had also come from Denise's kidnappers. The breakthrough in the case came months later when officers from Dublin Police Services of the Alameda... Not Dublin, Ireland.
Dublin, California?
I believe so, yes, because this is all San Francisco-y and all that, so yeah. So, Dublin Police Services of the Alameda County Sheriff's Department, investigating another break-in, arrested a Harvard-trained attorney and former U.S. Marine named Matthew Mueller. Matthew Mayo. He might as well have been, because he was as slimy as old Mayo.
It's probably related to Matthew Mustard.
Right? They searched his home in South Lake Tahoe and found evidence of the kidnapping. So ain't that crazy? They were looking for information on his current crime and found information and evidence on a previous crime. So, but yeah. The FBI investigation uncovered further evidence, including two videos of Matthew sexually assaulting Denise, who was blindfolded. And then no one else was arrested after that. In 2017, Matthew was sentenced to 40 years in prison. The judge described it as a heinous, atrocious, horrible crime. At the sentencing, Denise said she still suffered from nightmares every night, while her boyfriend, Aaron, said he cannot and will not ever be the same. In March 2016, a year after their ordeal began, the couple filed the federal lawsuit against the city of Vallejo, accusing the city and members of its police department of, quote-unquote, a vicious and shocking attack on two victims of a terrifying home invasion, kidnapping, and rape, and of creating a destructive nationwide media frenzy, end quote, by publicly accusing the couple of faking the crime. According to the couple's lawsuit, the city of Vallejo privately offered a self-serving and half-hearted apology via letter after Matthew's arrest, but refused to publicize this apology, opting rather to protect their own self-interest at the expense of the rights of these two innocent victims. The couple later announced that the city later agreed to pay a $2.5 million settlement, saying in a statement quoted in local media at the time, "What happened to us should not happen to anyone." In 2021, Vallejo police apologized for how the couple was treated and said it appeared that a promised public apology never took place. But Aaron told ABC7, fucking assholes, right? But Aaron told ABC7 that the department only apologized after major news outlets reached out.
They were put in the hot seat.
Yep. They basically felt, well, everybody else is doing it, we might as well try to look good and save face, you know? Yeah, right? The public apology here, published by ABC7, said the case had not been publicly handled with the type of sensitivity a case of this nature should have been handled with. Mm-hmm. But here's the good news. Denise and Aaron married in 2018 and now have two daughters.
They look so cute.
They do. They have beautiful little girls. And they said in media interviews they went through therapy to try to rebuild their lives and also resumed their work as physical therapists. The attorneys who helped defend them and a Dublin detective who helped link Matthew Mueller to their case were among the guests at their wedding, actually. So they became friends. That's nice. The couple also co-authored a book about their experience, which now I want to read. So you know me.
Yeah.
Bernadette Higgins, the co-creator of the Netflix series American Nightmare, told Vanity Fair that she reached out to both Vallejo police and the FBI to offer them the opportunity to take part in the documentary, but both declined.
Of course they did.
Of course. Because they knew they'd be fried.
It's like, they're pretty much like narcissists.
They are.
Like, you can't even fucking own up to being, like, in the wrong.
That's what narcissists do.
Yeah.
But can you imagine a whole police department, or at least a few, select few?
Yeah.
Are compared to narcissists now, because, yeah, the way they handled this case. I'm not saying that they're just horrible people or bad police officers, but their handling of this particular case lacked any type of ethics.
Or professionalism.
Professionalism. I mean, really, they just made up their mind and ran with it.
It's like they couldn't even give them the benefit of the doubt first. Like,
yes, it sounded sensationalized and fake and staged, but you got to at least check your shit and do your investigation before you can rule out.
It's like they
amen to that.
Yeah, they would have figured that out very quickly, but instead they wasted time just trying to blame them.
They were too cocky. They knew, I know what I'm talking about.
I mean, they're honestly lucky that the guy let her go.
Yeah. He could have killed her. And then what? It was on them because they didn't even try to solve this case. But they just insisted that it was exactly a recreation of the Gone Girl movie. And, I mean, how wrong they were at the end. Because the movie was released in 2014. It's a film directed by David Fincher, written by Gillian Flynn, based on her 2012 novel with the same name. It stars Ben Affleck, Rosamund Pike, Neil Patrick Harris, Mr. How I Met Your Mother.
Barney!
Also stars Tyler Perry.
Madea! Oh, he's in there?
Yeah, he is.
Voldemort's in this?
Voldemort's in this?
I've actually never seen Gone Girl, so.
I've never seen that.
It's worth watching. So, and also stars Carrie Coon in her film debut. She does a wonderful job. So basically, here's the gist of it. It's on their fifth wedding anniversary. Writing teacher Nick Dunn, which is Ben Affleck, returns home to find his wife Amy missing. Amy's fame as the inspiration for her parents' successful Amazing Amy children's books ensures widespread press coverage. So they basically start covering this case so much because she's already known. She's like kind of like a celebrity, kind of, you know? She's just known. And so the minute he reports her missing, they start really super covering her disappearance. The media finds Nick's apathy towards the disappearance suspicious because he's kind of like quiet and just doesn't look as distraught, I guess you could say, as he should.
Yeah.
So the media starts to suspect about that and starts to wonder that maybe he has something to do with her disappearance.
Suspicion.
Flashbacks in the form of like diary entries show a complex reality and what was really a deteriorating marriage. They didn't have the picture-perfect marriage that everybody thought they did. Amazing Amy was actually an idealized completion of the real Amy's failures. So everything that she wasn't was what was in this whole storyline, you know? Mm. So both Nick and Amy had also lost their jobs in the recession and moved from New York to Nick's hometown of North Carthage, Missouri. So they kind of downgraded in a sense, you know? And it was basically to support Nick's dying mom. Nick started to grow distant from Amy and began actually having an affair with Andy, one of his students. Ooh. Yeah, Nick wasn't a good guy. This wasn't good old Ben Affleck here. This was Mr. Nick being Mr. Nick with the dick.
I mean, while we're on the topic of Ben Affleck, I mean, not that J-Lo is all that great, but there's been, like, I don't know, like, TikToks and, like, things that I've seen about the way that he, like, is with her. Like, he kind of, like, is, like, a narcissist, too. Like, for real.
He's a serial cheater.
That doesn't surprise me either.
He didn't keep Jennifer Garner happy. That tells you something. Jennifer Garner seems like one of the most happy, down-to-earth kind of people that you could meet. And she didn't stay happy with him. I mean, she's still co-parenting with him, supposedly very, very good and everything, but some suspicious about Mr. Affleck over there. But apparently, suspicions were all correct about Mr. Nick the Dick over here. So, he was having this affair with his student, and Amy became resentful towards him for basically having her uproot her life for this.
Yeah.
You take me out of what I'm comfortable, where I was happy, to bring me here with your dying mom and your cheating dick. Like, great.
That is some fuck shit,
That is though. Some fuck shit. That really is some fuck shit. So, so Detective Rhonda Boney, another one. Why you gotta call her Boney?
At least I'm not Boner.
That would be worse. I'm Detective Rhonda Boner. Nobody would ever take her seriously.
It almost sounds like you're saying random boner.
Detective Random Boner.
Boner? I hardly know her.
So Mrs. Boney and the forensic team find poorly concealed evidence of struggle and profuse blood loss in the house. So they're basically thinking, this looks staged. Something about this don't smell right, you know? Then Boney starts learning about financial issues, about spousal disputes, and also about Amy's recent attempt to buy a gun.
Oh.
Yes. This is looking very sus, guys. Very sus. Medical reports indicate that Amy was pregnant, which Nick the Dick denies knowing that she was.
Mm.
On every wedding anniversary, Amy had set up like elaborate treasure hunts for Nick. She was very creative. This year's clues appear in places where Nick had sex with Andy.
Period.
Yeah. Like, bad bitch. Yeah. She's like, I know.
She ate that and left no crumbs.
Exactly. Mic drop. But, so this reveals that Amy knew of his affair, obviously. And Nick discovers thousands of dollars of items purchased with his credit card hidden in his twin sister Margot's woodshed. So already, what the hell? Who went on a shopping spree and hid it from me? Thousands of dollars. Man was banking, apparently. Amy's clues lead authorities to a half-burned diary that documents her growing dread of Nick and ending it with a genuine fear that he will kill her. So, yeah, all these little clues that she's been leaving around lead the cops to this diary that basically points the finger at Nick,
at him.
Saying, I'm scared of him, he's going to kill me. And she's missing now. So, what are the cops going to think? The audience then learns that Amy is alive, and she's actually hiding in a campground in the Ozarks. After discovering Nick the Dick's affair, Amy basically came up with this elaborate plan to frame him for her murder.
Damn.
Talk about revenge. She didn't dug her key into the side of his whatever souped up ride. No, no, no. She said, fuck this. If it means me hiding out for the rest of my life and pretending I die and framing this motherfucker for my murder, I'ma do it.
Shit, we're living in 2024 and she's living in 3034.
Apparently, because she can come up with this whole scheme to make him freaking responsible. But she had actually had him ramp up her life insurance and secretly used his credit card to buy the woodshed items. She befriended a pregnant neighbor, told her stories about Nick's temper. Oh, he's so bad. He, you know, giving her the tea that she could later come and say, well, she did tell me once that he was bad to her. And, you know,
she was plotting.
She was in every angle. Like, wow, bro. I wonder if she had all the little pins and strings hanging everywhere, like connecting shit. Like,
science. Probably.
Science.
Like, seriously. This way, she even ensured that the media felt sympathy for her when she disappeared, hearing of, oh, he was angry to her, he treated her poorly. Oh, the poor thing, he must have killed, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, damn, bro.
Mm.
she wrote a diary with increasingly made-up stories that placed incriminating evidence in the treasure hunt spots for the police to find. On the morning of her disappearance, she drained and splattered her own blood across the kitchen and then cleaned it haphazardly to make it look like he was covering up.
Yeah.
Her original plan was to drown herself after Nick's arrest and have her body found to ensure his death sentence. So she wasn't even planning on, I'm going to live in a hideout for the rest of my life.
No, she was.
She really was going to kill herself to make sure that he was blamed for her murder.
Goddamn.
Talk about revenge.
For real.
See, and some of my exes say that I was crazy. They lucky I ain't crazy. Shit. So, Nick starts coming up, you know, figuring out her scheme. And he's like, he convinces Margo of of his innocence and hires a lawyer called Tanner Bolt. Interesting name.
What are with these last names?
At least it's not Mustard.
At least it's not Mustard.
Yeah, right? And this guy's known for representing, you know, suspects, similar type of shit.
Yeah.
Nick meets two of Amy's ex-boyfriends, Tommy O'Hara, that claims he was framed for rape by her after he ended their relationship, and wealthy Desi Collings, against whom Amy had filed a restraining order for stalking.
Oh my God.
But he turns Nick away. He's like, I don't want no part of this, blah, blah, blah. When Amy's campground neighbors rob her, she calls Desi for help, convincing him that she fled Nick's abuse. Desi agrees to hide her in his lake house. Bolt convinces Nick to reveal his affair on a popular talk show. And so he takes the opportunity to take the, you know, the narrative from the media.
Mm-hmm.
And Andy reveals the affair at a press conference shortly before the show. So kind of fucks up his plans. But he still insists on conducting his interview. He wants to make sure he gets that shit done. But at that point, he affirms his innocence and he starts pretending like he regrets, for the things he did as a spouse, knowing that Amy's watching him. So he's like, I'm sorry, Amy, that I, you know, cheated on you and that I was so mean to you, but please come home. I miss you, type of shit. And she's watching. Interview's a success. It gets widespread sympathy for him now as a husband. They're like, damn, you know? Okay, he's owning up to his mistakes. He's saying he cheated, but he didn't kill her. He wants her back. So it works for him in that. But Boney, Detective Boney, has already gathered enough murder evidence and arrests Nick and Margo. But Bolt, the attorney guy, bails them out, and they brace for the impending trial, I should say. After watching Nick's interview, Amy rekindles her attraction to him, and she's like, maybe he's not such a bad guy. Maybe he didn't deserve to go to jail for my murder that I'm not dead. You know? So, she spends weeks crafting her escape story. It's like, I pulled off the fact that I was kidnapped. What can I come up with to excuse what happened to me and come up with a kidnapping and an escape? She's a crafty bitch, I tell you. Mm-hmm. Using lake house surveillance cameras and self-inflicted, brace yourself, wrist and vaginal injuries.
Oh, what the
fuck? She makes it appear that Desi kidnapped and raped her. One of her exes that supposedly had stalked her.
And
that helped her. Poor guy. She then seduces Desi, slits his throat during sex, and then returns home covered in his blood, thus clearing Nick of any suspicion. Mm. So this part of her plan obviously works. Medical examiners lend credibility to her story. Hey, it looks like she was having sex, there is some of his semen and shit in her. Okay, whatever. During questioning, Boney probes her inconsistencies, But Amy spins the focus onto Bonnie by calling her incompetent. You know, as narcissists usually tend to do, I'm going to deflect anything wrong off of me and point out all of your mistakes. Mm-hmm. So the FBI believes Amy and closes the case. But Detective Bonnie just has this hunch that Amy is guilty. Mm. So upon returning home, Amy tells Nick the truth. She actually tells him the fucking truth. Mm. She admits to killing Desi. She tells him that when she saw him on TV pleading for her return, that was the Nick that she wants. She wants that Nick. And it's the one who inspired her forgiveness. So, Nick, obviously, shares this with Detective Bonnie. And the attorney Bolt. And with Margot. And despite the fact that they unanimously agree that Amy is guilty, everyone acknowledges a lack of evidence.
Yeah.
So, Bolt wishes Nick well and says, fuck this shit, I'm out, and goes back to New York.
Damn.
Shit.
I
got lots of other clients.
Yeah, you're right? I got other clients that are going to be easier to help than you. I'm out. So then, a televised interview takes place in their home 7 weeks later. Anticipating Nick's intention to leave her and publicly expose her story, so she kind of sensed he was going to leave her and tell everybody she did this. Amy, at that point, reveals her pregnancy minutes before the interview, having inseminated herself with Nick's sperm from a fertility clinic. Nick reacts violently at first, but feels responsible for the child and ultimately decides to stay with Amy, despite Margot's despair. The happy couple announce on TV that they are expecting a child. And that's how the movie ends.
Damn.
So, if you compare the Denise Huskins case to the Gone Girl case, the only comparison you really have is that there was a kidnapped female and a boyfriend or spouse that doesn't know where they're at.
Yeah.
Because even if you compare it to Gone Girl, Nick didn't know where she was. He had no involvement in this. But then, when you look at Denise Huskins, she wasn't responsible for it at all, but in the movie, Amy was. So, the cops to have gone and said, hey, this is another Gone Girl, maybe he had just seen the movie, and it was fresh in his mind, or just read the book? Because I don't see where he got the stretch to just say, this is another one of these.
It's just crazy because, I mean, I've never even watched the movie, but just listening to you explain it, Gone Girl is way more, like, elaborate.
Yes. Know? Yes.
Like, it's not, like, in comparison to that, it's not really, like, so, like, off the table that somebody could break in and just take somebody, you know?
Exactly.
And at least he had that to say to the police. With Gone Girl and with Nick, he's like, I don't know where she went.
Yeah.
Well, which, I mean, he was innocent.
And like, he was being framed.
Right.
This poor guy was the only way he was actually, in a sense, you could call it being framed, was by the cops themselves that were automatically assuming he was guilty.
Right.
Because there was no evidence pointing his direction at all. He's telling them, I saw this. This is my eyewitness account. It happened. They took her. They drugged me. Blah, blah, blah. Like, he's a witness. In Nick's case, there were no witnesses. Nobody saw anything. He had no idea what the fuck happened.
Which, and this makes me wonder. I don't know if they actually ever said this in the documentary, but there was more than one person, right, when the kidnapping happened?
Yes.
With Denise. Yeah. So were the other two guys, were they ever found and charged? Or, like, how did they have this involvement? Because really, it seemed like Matthew Mueller, which is the
main guy, right? Responsible, yes.
Like, he obviously has this sort of, like, fetish, if you will. Like, he, like, because with the other case, with, like, the younger girl,
mm-hmm.
she was, like, Asian or whatever. Like, he likes to stalk mm-hmm. and, you know, like, that is, like, a fetish for him.
Yeah. A lot of these kidnappers have that, where they'll watch, they'll pick their victim, they'll start watching them, documenting basically their moves so that they know when is the right moment to take them.
So it's like, how did these other two people get involved? Like, do they also have a thing
for I don't remember or? Exactly what the case is. For all I remember, because, you know, I smoke a lot of weed, so I mean, don't...
And you also got Dory memory on top of that.
And I also have Dory memory on top of that.
Memory not so good looking.
My memory not so good looking. No, it's not at all. My memory oh, horrible.
It's ugly looking.
It's been horrible for 19 years.
19.
But, really, honestly, I don't remember if there was somebody involved. Because remember in the case of at least there, Denise's kidnapping... He came in the middle of the night, started blinding them with lights, started freaking tying them up. Like, I mean, he caught them off guard, disoriented, blinded. It could have been just him. I don't remember if he had any help or not, because the fact that they don't mention him in any way, I mean, mention anyone else in any way, only mention him. And I only remember really him in the documentary. They thought there might have been more people, but like I said, then again, they had a recording going on. They had disorienting things going on. They were just woken up.
True. I mean, yeah, it could have just been him, but it's also kind of hard for me to believe that he could have just pulled that off by himself.
Remember, he was an ex-Marine or some shit? So he's got training.
True.
So yeah, true. When you look at it that way, anything is possible.
True.
But so that is basically this week's fact or fiction. What did y'all think?
I enjoyed it.
The Viejo police are a bunch of old dirtbags.
Yeah.
The Viejo police. Viejo.
Just Viejo. Both the case and the movie. That's some fuck shit.
I want to see the movie though. That sounds really
Yeah, cool. I really want to see the movie now.
Yeah, no, we definitely, we'll see if we could rent it or some shit and we'll watch it. But we definitely got, next week's episode is a horror movie episode.
Ooh, which one are we doing?
We are going to look at the Blair Witch Project movies. Both the original.
And the remake.
And the remake.
I think I've only seen the original.
Oh, I've seen the original.
I've seen both.
I haven't seen them.
I've seen both. So we have a little bit of everything here. We've got those that have only seen the original and not the remake. We've got those like me that have seen both. And we've got those like your mom that haven't seen any. So it's going to be fun to see them all.
Warning. First one's porn as hell.
First one, A. Give it to their marketing. That was genius. And we'll get into that on next week's
Wasn't
episode.
Wasn't that one from like 1997 or like... You know,
it was
90s.
Around, yes, it was late 90s, the okay. exact year I don't have on me right now, but it was definitely around that time, because I could remember exactly what I was doing in my life when that movie happened, so I want to say maybe 99.
I wasn't even a sparkle 99. In my parents' eyes.
No, none of you were. Yeah. But definitely, you want to tune into that episode, especially those of you that love our horror movie episodes, definitely got to join in.
Yes.
And other than that, y'all know where to find us on Facebook, on Insta, on X, on TikTok, on Reddit. We even got a YouTube channel. We will start posting content on it soon, I promise.
We got an OnlyFans, don't play.
shit, I don't.
You can see explicit J-Lo booty.
Have him twerk it. That.
Shit.
Make it more fun. other than that, guys, if you want a guest spot, if you want a collab, if you want a sponsor, just reach out to us on social media or on Gmail. We'd love to hear from you. But until next time, stay lit, witches.